Hi, I'm Jane Lindholm. I'm the host of Vermont Edition, and I just wanted to let you know that this podcast has been edited for brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. In the past week, many voters in the state have received a postcard providing them with the option of voting by mail for the August 11th primary. The postcard asks the recipient to fill out the pertinent information and to mail it back to their town clerk. Secretary of State Jim Kondo says the postcards are a way to remind voters about Vermont's early voting law. That's a law that allows people to vote within 45 days of an election. Kondo thinks voters concerned about the COVID-19 pandemic might be very interested in this type of voting this year.
And this would help us catch up on some address changes and things with folks. By sending a postcard, prepaid postcard out, people can request and update their information and send it back to their town clerk.
Vermont will also use a vote-by-mail system for the November election. It's a situation where every registered voter will be sent a ballot. They can mail it back in, they can drop it off at their town clerk's office, or they can present it in person at a polling place on Election Day. So these are Vermont's changes in election law. Why is Vermont using one system in August and another one in November? And what about concerns that mail-in voting could lead to voter fraud? With us today to discuss these issues is Secretary of State Jim Kondos. Secretary Kondos, welcome back to Vermont Edition.
Thanks, Bob. It's great to be here.
Secretary Kondos, let's start off by taking a look at the August 11th primary. I believe every registered voter in Vermont is going to be receiving or already has received a postcard from your office, providing them with the opportunity to request an early voting ballot from their town clerk. Why did you take this approach?
Well, first of all, I think it's important to recognize that everything we're doing this year as a result of COVID is based on two unwavering goals that are driving our decision making. First, we want to preserve every Vermonter's right to vote. And second, to protect the health and safety of voters, town clerks, and obviously our poll workers, our election workers. So the reason why we chose to do it this way was twofold. One was we didn't have enough time to set up vote by mail, the direct vote by mail for the primary, because we couldn't get any kind of an agreement with the governor. And in fact, our vendors that we're using told us that if we really wanted to do it for August, we would have had to start probably in January or February to get ready for it. That did open up the window, though. We do have the time to try to get things in order and the logistics out of the way to prepare for the November general election. So, you know, before we get too far down the road here, Bob, I wondered if you wanted to hear some updated numbers.
Absolutely. You know, just before you give me those numbers, though, do you think that most Vermont voters were or are unaware of the early voting system and you just needed to provide them with a reminder?
Well, we do a lot of reach out via social media, press releases when early vote periods start anyway. But we just felt that this was a method to try to bring it to the top of the top of the priority list for folks across the state. Many of the states, red states and blue states, are using this approach of sending out a postcard reminder or absentee request a postcard to all their registered voters. Now, I also want to clarify one thing. It's not to all registered voters. It's to all active registered voters. We have about 480,000 registered voters in Vermont. 450,000 of those are what we consider active. The other 30,000 are those that have been challenged by local boards of civil authority and their town clerks to verify their address or whether they are still considered a voter in Vermont. And those things are They're going to get a separate postcard, which actually will be going out, I believe, next week, asking them to affirm where they're living. So it's really, this is just a new approach that we've tried, and it includes a postage paid return postcard. The return card goes to the town clerk, this whole process was paid for by the state.
So you were saying you've got some updated numbers. We've still got a ways to go before the August 11th primary, but it seems like there's a lot of voter interest in some of these early ballots.
Yeah, and I think, you know, don't forget, we're talking about a primary, the statewide primary, and the statewide primary is a little different animal than the general election. That also weighed into our thinking of how we would move forward. But the statewide primary is actually three primaries or three elections in one. There's a Republican nomination process. There's a Democratic nomination process and a progressive nomination process. So each of those are separate elections. You will be sent, or if you show up in person, you will receive three ballots, one for each party. You are allowed to vote one of them. Nobody knows which one you're voting on. The other two must be discarded either in person at the local polling place or in the mail when you mail your ballot back. So the numbers, I'm just going to give a little bit of historical context here. In August of 2016, which was the last presidential election, we had 120,000 people who voted in the primary. Of that, we had 22,300 absentee voters in that primary. And in the August primary of 18, we had 107,600 actual voters for that primary, and we had 17,100 absentee votes in that primary. If you total total absentee votes that were cast in both elections, that was about 40,000 roughly. And we know as of yesterday at 3 o'clock, we had over 50,000 people who had requested early absentee votes to be mailed to them. So we have surpassed the equivalent of both 18 and 16 for totals. Now, this doesn't necessarily mean that we will have an increased voter turnout, but we suspect we will. We don't know at this point whether these folks are just shifting from voting in person versus the mail or not. But the package that goes out to each individual voter that makes that request for the primary will receive the three ballots. They'll receive, let me make sure I get this right, three internal envelopes. One envelope is for their voted ballot. You will vote your ballot. You will put it into that envelope. You will sign that ballot, which is under penalty of perjury. Put that in the return envelope, which is the second envelope, and then there's a third envelope for your unvoted ballots or your discarded ballots. So all of that has to come back to the town clerk. And these are pre-addressed to the town clerk and pre-paid postage. So there really is, it's a very simple process and goes along with our message that it's simple, safe, and secure.
Secretary Condos, those are really interesting numbers when you look at the ballot requests for 2020 so far at more than 50,000, exceeding the totals at the same time in 2016 and 2018. Do you think that, you're out, you're talking to town clerks, you've got a sense of what's going on out there. Do you have that sense that there are a fair number of voters who have concerns about the COVID-19 pandemic and they really prefer to vote by mail?
I think that is a strong message that's out there. I just met with a group of clerks recently this week to discuss the general election. But I think that in general, they're seeing a tremendous number of people requesting absentee ballots. And you know, to put it in perspective, one of the problems we have is the election workers themselves, which they fall into the cohort of the most vulnerable for this COVID virus. So that's also a concern, is the amount of poll workers that we will have available. And that's one of the reasons why we and the town clerks are hoping that more people will use mail-in version, because that will drive down the in-person voting and actually help protect.
Let's go to our listeners and get their conversation and their thoughts and comments, and start with Molly, who's calling from Hinesburg. Hi, Molly. Welcome to the program.
Hi there. Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely.
So, Mr. Secretary, I just wanted to say I'm very strongly in agreement with voting by mail. I'm an Army veteran, so I voted absentee a few times while I was in service. And before I moved to Vermont, I lived in Oregon, which, as many of our listeners probably know, has done voting by mail for quite a long time. They do automatic registration. You never have to worry about trying to find your polling place or trying to get there, trying to get time off or anything like that. And certainly during a pandemic, I mean, like you already brought up, we need to consider not just our own health, but the health of our polling workers. So overall, I don't know of any evidence that voting by mail leads to voter fraud. And I know there's a lot of compelling evidence that it increases the number of people participating in voting, which in a democracy seems like a great thing.
Molly, thank you very much for those comments. Yes, there are currently five states that do a universal vote by mail. Those five states are Oregon, Washington, Colorado, Utah, and Hawaii. And I know Oregon has been doing it since the late 90s. Washington started in the 2000s. So it's not, this is nothing new, but also I think, and you highlighted it a little bit, our military personnel have been voting by mail since the Civil War, really. So it's a tried and true method. And in the last few years, the Brennan Center for Justice, a nonpartisan organization, did a study and found that voting by mail did not increase or have an increase of voter fraud. So it really is something I think that is more states are going that direction. I know New Jersey and California for sure are planning to use the universal vote by mail system. And there are other states, even Republican states, are using a more absentee requests, but trying to get more people to use vote by mail for this year's election.
Secretary Condos, we got this email from Peter, who wrote, "Make sure you follow the directions on filling out your ballot. I mailed mine without putting it in a special envelope and signing it. I mailed it in. It was not counted, even though I said I would pick it up before it was opened. Once it's mailed, it's considered to be done voting. Also, there are some people, you know, 45 days out before an election, things happened in the weeks before an election. And if you do cast your early ballot, you need to realize that you can't say, oh, I changed my mind. I'd like to go down to the town clerk and resubmit a new ballot."
That is all correct. That and we're following the state law. There is no provision to bring back your ballot, if you so to speak. Once you vote that ballot and put it in the mail, it is gone. It's been submitted to the town clerk. Once the town clerk receives that ballot, there is no chance to bring that ballot back to make a change. We have no recovery process for that. That is something we may look at for the future, but for this current year, we can't do it.
Secretary Condos, let's shift gears and look at the November election, which is there are going to be some slightly different procedures in place. As you mentioned, every active registered voter in Vermont, of which there are roughly 450,000, will be sent a ballot. And the registered voter at that point can fill it out and mail it back anytime before the election. They can fill it out and drop it off at the town clerk's office anytime. Or they could fill it out, and if they wanted to, they could bring it in person to the polling place. So folks should understand, polling places are still going to be open on November 3rd, correct?
Thank you very much for saying that, Bob. That was something I was wanted to make clear. I also wanted to, if we can just take a step back for a second on the last caller's comment about the voted ballot. So the process, when you're sending it back via the mail, you need to place the voted ballot inside the certificate envelope. You need to complete and sign the certificate envelope. It requires your name and a signature under penalties of perjury. You need to put the unvoted ballots in the unvoted ballot envelope. It's clearly marked. And then you need to seal both envelopes and place them in the mailing envelope, which is already pre-addressed and postage paid. And we've tried to make this as simple as possible, but you need to pay attention to the instructions to send that ballot back, to send your voted ballot back to us.
Now, there have been some critics of this idea of sending all active registered voters a ballot for the November election, and they wonder, why didn't you just use the same system for the November election that you're using for the primary? That is, send a postcard to all registered voters, encouraging them to request an early ballot, and then letting them decide if they want to take advantage of this option. Here's Caledonia Senator Joe Benning.
The system that we now have in place with that element, that little element of security, says, okay, you can get a ballot, you can mail it in. End of story. The system works. Our town clerks have been trained on it. There's no need for additional money. There's no need for additional training.
Secretary Kondos, why have a different system in November? Why wouldn't the one that you're using for the August primary work in November as well?
So first, as I said earlier, the August primary is really in a sense, it's a simpler time because we have less people that actually come out to vote in the August primary. Typically, it's about 20 to 25% of the voter checklist. So it's about 100 to 125,000 people that will come out for that. The general election is a much different election where we're only sending out one ballot. You only have to fill out one ballot. It's really, we have a much higher voter participation. Vermont was ranked 11th in the nation under our current system that we had after the 18 election. We're at about 65 to 70% for the general election, which is about 300 to 350,000 people. The object of why we're sending the ballot itself, one is to make it easier for folks. Two is to ensure that no voter who forgot or missed their chance to request a ballot needs to make that difficult last-minute decision about challenging their health, perhaps, or their right to vote, and have to go to an in-person, because you do need time, and we're trying to get these out within that early part of that early 45-day early vote period, and what we're trying to do is set it up so that people can access their ballot without accessing a danger to their health and to themselves or to the poll workers. So it really is two different systems in a sense, although the general election will pretty much operate exactly the same with the exception that we're mailing the ballot directly to the voters. And part of the issue, we've now had automatic voter registration for 3+ years, which is a upload of the DMV files to us. The DMV, when you're getting your driver's license, asks the same questions that we ask when you want to register to vote. Are you a U.S. citizen? Are you a Vermont resident? And are you 18 or over? Those are the three questions we ask that you ask for being registered to vote. Those are the same questions that they ask at the Department of Motor Vehicles. So we get those updates. People have a tendency to remember to change their address when they move on their license, for their driver's license. They don't always remember to go to their town clerk and change their voting voter registry. So this helps us to do that, and this is actually catching fire across the country. I don't know exactly. The last count I knew was about 17 or 18 states currently use automatic voter registration, with more states on the line to it's in their legislatures to be passed and voted on. So I think it really comes down to remember that voting is a constitutional right, whether it's U.S. or Vermont Constitution. That is a right that you have, and we are trying to make it available to all voters across all eligible voters across the country. The true voter fraud in this country, the true voter fraud in this country, is denying any eligible Vermonter or American the right to cast a ballot in an election. That is, elections are the basis, the very core of our democratic process. It's where it all starts. And we want to make sure that everybody has access to and the opportunity to vote their ballot.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to John, who's calling from Stratford. Hi, John. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thanks, Bob. Thanks, Secretary Condos. I was wondering if you could talk about another change to the election this year, and this is in regards to independent candidates. Now, unfortunately, one of the saddest things about our democracy in Vermont is that often elections go uncontested, and this in which no election should go uncontested. This is the time when there should be vigorous policy debates and people should have a choice. This year, where there isn't a candidate of running against incumbents or just one person from a particular party, it is particularly easy to become an independent candidate because you don't have to go around and circulate a petition to get names on, to get on the ballot. And could you tell people how this can be done? And again, to make our democracy a little more vigorous and healthy.
All right. Well, first of all, the only change I think that you're talking about is not having, whether you're a major party, minor party, or an independent, the ability, not having the requirement to go out and get signatures based on what race you're running. For instance, a Vermont House race would be 50 signatures. For a Vermont Senate race, it would be 100 signatures, and for any statewide race, it would be 500 signatures. So, because we saw early on the potential for infecting more people, because people would be going door to door or walking up to people on the street corner, and frankly, the street corners went pretty vacant. We decided that it was, and the legislature also approved removing the requirement for signatures. Keep in mind, if you total up all of the races that are run and the number of signatures that are gathered, it's around close to like 50,000 signatures. So that means 50,000 Vermonters would have to touch someone's petition form and pen to write their signature on. So we decided to waive that for just this year alone. And you know, if the legislature wants to take it up for next year, that's fine. But this law that we put in place right now is just for 2020. And so we're going to deal with that. One of the things that has happened is the major parties, candidates, the Republicans, Republicans, Democrats, and progressives had to file their candidate filings by May 28th. That's to give us enough time. We had about 3 weeks after that to create, and in this case, for the August primary, we had to create 825 different ballots. There are 275 districts in the state of Vermont. Each one has their own ballot. And so 275 times three parties, we had 825 different ballots that had to be created, proofed, printed, and delivered to the town clerks. As a result, the primary itself in August is only for the major party candidates to determine their nominations to go on the ballot in November. As far as independents and minor parties, they have a different timeline, and I forget the exact dates, but I think it's like July 23rd to August 5th or something like that. It's on our available on our website, and you can see it there if you go to the elections tab. So the independents and minor parties can submit their filing for candidacy during that time period prior to the primary itself. And anybody that files at that will also be automatically put into the general election. I think that answers your question, but I'm not positive.
I think you covered it well. Do you think, Secretary Kondos, that by doing away with the need for the petitions because of the COVID-19 pandemic, do you think it resulted in more candidates running, or did it have any effect at all?
Well, to date, we can't tell that because we haven't got all the independents and minor parties, but it didn't look like it was about the same, maybe a little bit more, but about the same for the major parties. So, typically for the general election, we have somewhere around 400 candidates up and down the ballot. And I think for the primary, we've got somewhere around 300 right now. So that leaves a little bit of room for the independents and minors to make that cut. So, we're pretty confident in what we did. We don't think that there's going to be this fear. There was this fear that there would be, hundreds and hundreds of candidates popping up. I think sometimes, Bob, you might be aware that the ballot sometimes for governor in California sometimes has 150 candidates on it that takes up one whole side of the ballot. But we don't seem to have that problem here.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Carrie, who's calling from Vergennes. Hi, Carrie. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me. I am just wondering, I heard earlier that our ballots are postage paid to send back. However, I have mine, and I filled mine out, and I did get ready to send it back, but it's asking for postage, which I don't mind. But it would be nice to know ahead of time or in our...
I lost that call.
So I think what Carrie was saying that she had heard earlier in the program that the envelopes to send her ballots back would be postage paid, but that's not the envelope that she has. Hers was requiring postage. Your thoughts about that? Is that possible?
Unless the town clerk had some old envelopes that they were using, they were not supposed to use them. They were supposed to use the new envelopes that we sent to them, but I think she should call her clerk up and ask the clerk, and maybe the clerk can either send her a new ballot, a new envelope, or whatever. But I'm not aware of it because the envelopes that we printed, a Vermont company printed all the envelopes, and we printed about them. I don't know. Almost a million envelopes. So I'm not sure what she's talking about exactly. The inside envelopes would not have postage on it. Only the one return envelope going back to the town clerk would actually have an envelope, a postage stamp on it.
So that's an important differentiation. When people get their primary ballots and they decide to vote in either the Republican, the Democrat, or the Progressive primary, they're going to put those ballots in an envelope, and then that envelope is going to go into a larger envelope that you say should be postage paid.
Correct.
All right. And if anybody has any questions about that, they certainly should be in touch with their town clerks. And speaking of the town clerks, Secretary Kondos, you know, we've seen just in a couple of states already holding their primaries that there's been a flood of mail-in votes, so many that election workers can't tabulate them all in time. And in some cases, it took almost a week to get some idea of who won a particular race. Do you have concerns about that in Vermont?
I really don't, and I'll tell you why. First of all, every state has its own set of election laws. So there are 50 states, 50 sets of election laws. Some states use if the envelope, the absentee ballot is postmarked on election day or earlier, it can be counted even though it's received after the election. Vermont law actually says, and this is something the legislature may consider in the future, but Vermont law says that you have to have that ballot in the hands of the town clerk by 7 p.m. on election night. What we're doing is providing the clerks with the ability. We will be in our directive that will be going out to them shortly, providing them with the ability to start, if you want to call, processing the ballots prior to the election. In other words, they won't be able to see who's ahead or not, but they could take the ballots out of the secure envelope. And in those towns that have tabulators, they could actually run it through the tabulator. The tabulator does not give them it only gives them a total of how many ballots have gone through, and that actually is a security measure. So they wouldn't be able to tell who's winning a particular race. That is impossible to do unless they close out that race completely. And then we would know on election night that something else happened. But it's just not the way it's going. But the town clerks, we've worked with the town clerks. They currently have the ability to process absentee ballots the day before the election, and we're looking to extend that out 2 to 3 weeks or so to help them with this influx of ballots coming in.
Let's talk to Janice in Putney. Hi, Janice. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, and hello to the secretary as well. This is very helpful. Secretary, I'm wondering if there's any way you would consider creating a short video that you could post on your website, or that town clerks could also post on town websites, that illustrate this, you know, envelope process for people. There are people out here who have trouble with reading complicated, detailed instructions. Alternatively, if you could create a graphic that people could follow the process, that might be helpful as well.
Thank you for that, and I will say like minds. We are already in process of getting ready to prepare some short videos on this, we're also going to be holding a media or press conference on next Monday. The details on that will be going out either later today or tomorrow, but we're going to try to answer a lot of these questions ahead of time, and it's been a very trying time for us and the very small elections team that we have at the state of Vermont. Vermont has the smallest elections team in the country. We have 5 people, and then we have 246 town clerks who are some of our hardest working municipal officials. And they don't get enough credit for the work that they do. Typically on an election day, they're in their offices or in their polling locations before 5 a.m., and they don't leave until after midnight on many an election night. I do want to go back to one thing that state as well. And Bob, I think there's a lot of folks I'll say the press is guilty of this, but not in a bad way. It's just that I think we have this mentality where we need instant gratification and instant news. And on election night, the polls close at 7, And a lot of folks want to know at 7:05 who won. And that's just not possible. And it's going to probably be even longer this year. But I do want to say that the way the Vermont law works is, even though we close on election day, the election, and we start processing, the town clerks actually do not certify their elections to, they only provide preliminary unofficial results on election night into our election night reporting system. Those numbers will change. They will fluctuate. And as they finalize their numbers over the next 48 hours, they have 48 hours to certify their results and get that information to our office so that we can compile it into the statewide results. And then we hold what is called a caucus, a canvass, which is 7 days after the election, which is the following Tuesday at 10 a.m., to certify the election. And the representatives on that canvas are a member from each of the major parties plus me, and our elections director will provide the information of who won those elections and that we verified those numbers. So Vermont's one of the quick ones at 7 days. Many states are 14 and 30 days out before they certify their elections. So we do have a pretty good idea on election night, but it can change, and this year that's one of the reasons why we're looking at the processing of ballots to try to get them done as quickly as possible, because we don't want people to have a false sense of security in the results on election night, which they shouldn't anyway, but it sometimes happens.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Joan, who's calling from Williston. Hi, Joan. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I have my ballot here, and one advantage that I find, and by the way, I voted absentee up until 2016 because I was working out of state probably 3 weeks out of four. So I was used to voting absentee. But the advantage I find now is that I can research each candidate and the positions that they take, and then really make an informed decision and find out whose values and beliefs align with mine. So I think it's a great advantage to have it at home to look at, and I am very much in favor of absentee voting.
Joan, thanks very much for your phone call.
Thank you, Joan. And we hear that often, that people like the fact that they can sit at their kitchen table and on their laptop or whatever, go from website to website, checking people's positions. And we think that's not a bad thing to be able to do. Some people do that before they go to the in-person polling. But I do want to clarify again, I want to state this clearly, Bob, that because there's been some misconceptions out there. The polling locations will be open on election day. They will not be closed. So you can still, if you insist on going in, you will be able to go in. We have provided the clerks already for the August primary and will again for the general election protective personal equipment, such as masks and hand sanitizer and hand wipes. So that stuff is being delivered. Actually, it's already been delivered for the August primary, and we're looking to get even more for the general election because we anticipate more people. So we are doing everything we can at the state level to ensure that the town clerks and the municipalities have the stuff that they need in order to operate the election in a very safe manner.
Secretary Condos, I just wanted to spend a moment looking at a U.S. Supreme Court decision this week that basically upheld the operations of the Electoral College. And there are some people who think the time has come to do away with the college, that it's really outdated, and elect the President of the United States based on the national popular vote. And there's a coalition, I believe, of 16 states so far, including Vermont, who support this change. And right now, these states represent roughly 196 electoral votes. They need to get to 270 to be successful. And the way it would work is that these states have pledged to support the candidate who wins the national popular vote, even if that candidate didn't win their particular state. Is this a good idea? Would you like to see this put into place, let's say, by 2024?
Well, I don't know that it will be, but it's something that I certainly have supported in years past. When I was a state senator, I supported national popular vote. I think it's a good idea that we get back to it. Let's you know, look at history. Just in the last 20 years, in 2000, George Bush won the presidency, even though he lost the popular vote to Al Gore. In 2004, George Bush then won, and he could have lost had there been a 60,000 vote swing just in Ohio, one state, and he would have lost, even though he had over 3 million more votes than John Kerry. And then, of course, we know that Hillary Clinton lost, even though she had more 3 million votes more than Donald Trump. So there is a strong consensus. There are 16 states who have codified this language and are considered part of the consortium. And there are many other states that have legislation in their legislatures looking at it to see if it's something they want to pass or not. So, you know, we'll know more in the next couple of years, but I don't know if it'll be ready for 2024 or not.
You know, I'm wondering about the concept here. I think it's fair to say that the founders of this country supported the Electoral College because they didn't trust voters to elect the president. So Alexander Hamilton was one of the big supporters of the Electoral College. And in Federalist Papers number 68, he made it very clear that the elector should be the one to determine the qualifications of presidential candidates and not individual voters. So do you think that's sort of an outdated concept?
Well, the population was a lot less then than it is today. I'm a strong proponent of the Vermont and U.S. constitutions, but I do think that, and this is the Electoral College is in the Constitution, the U.S. Constitution, and the way national popular vote has been put in place, it still complies with the Constitution. But I do think that there is nothing wrong with looking at what we have in law and in our Constitution to see if a change is necessary. We do have things that have changed. I mean, for instance, to begin with, back when this was put in place, don't forget, only white male landowners were allowed to vote. And since that time, we've obviously changed who's allowed to vote.
So what do you say to those people who don't like the idea of the national popular vote system because they think smaller states like Vermont, and I believe that there are 8 states like Vermont that only have 3 electoral votes, that these small states are going to be totally ignored in a presidential election?
I would suggest that the facts are that those 8 states are already ignored, and I think I believe that if you looked at 2008, 2012, and 2016 elections, those 8 states had one visit by a presidential candidate during the general election after the primary. They had one event where a presidential candidate showed up, whereas a state like Wisconsin, which has, if you total the 8 states, population versus Wisconsin. Wisconsin falls just short of the total population for those 8 states, but Wisconsin had, I think it was something like 30 or 40 events where presidential candidates showed up. You know, I think with the exception of New Hampshire, which is a 4 electoral college electoral vote state, and the fact that they're the first state in the country to actually have a primary election, and that's their call to fame. But I think with the exception of that, the small states really are ignored by presidential candidates during the process. And I do think that You know, you are elected president of the United States of America, not of the seven swing states or whatever. So we should pay more attention to it. And keep in mind, Bob, I think, you know, there's two things that I always bring back. One is we all believe that one person, one vote. And the second is that we have that the person with the most votes wins. And I think those are two simple but strong statements that I think set up our democratic ideals. And I think is something that we should be considering on a regular basis.
Well, this has been a great discussion of Vermont's election laws. Secretary of State Jim Condos, many thanks for taking the time to be with us today and to outline how the voting will go for the August 11th primary and how it's going to be a little different in November. We really appreciate you taking the time to be with us today.
Thank you. And I just want to just say to the voters out there, your vote is your voice. Please energize and exercise that.